loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
This is All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the world championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I.
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Sports Radio 730 and 103.9. The Yump. We missed Mike Griffith a little bit earlier. We're going to catch up with him now of SECCountry.com. Good morning, Mike. How's it going?
Doing well, Cole. How are you?
Doing well. I want to talk Tennessee draftees and their replacements in a moment, but we've had sort of a reoccurring theme throughout the course of the show today, and I saw multiple articles yesterday about just sort of the future of college football, and safety is a big part of that. And how can the game become safer, change things that would allow it to be more safe? And one of the things we've debated is eliminating kickoffs in college football. Do you feel like this is a realistic, viable option that needs to or will take place in order to make the game better?
Well, I think it's something they can look at, but, you know, I don't know how serious the NCAA is about making football safer, because they just, looks like they've just passed a measure that's going to make it less safe by not allowing these high school coaches to go to camps and get instruction from college football coaches and pass it on to high schools. I mean, I don't understand how naive this was, where, you know, these high school coaches can't work camps. I mean, that'd be like saying that, you know, the people training to be doctors can't work at hospitals until they have their medical license, right? I mean, you've got to be – I mean, there's a level of expertise that these high school coaches get by working these camps, and they've taken that away now. So, you know, before we start talking about changing the rules, how about we focus on how the game is taught? Because truly, Cole, as you know, that has a lot to do with who gets hurt and who doesn't, is quite frankly, it's proper technique, and a lot of the injuries occur you know, when kids get tired and whatnot, but the technique is the whole key to football and staying healthy.
Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com joining us. And another side of this argument, Mike, with what's been happening at ESPN, and you've seen it on a journalistic side of things, is the business aspect of college football and the safety of that moving forward. Not safety, of course, in a very different way. When you look at the future of college football from a business perspective, a lot of people believe that we have been inside an expanding bubble with college football that some people believe already has burst. Some people think is about to burst. From a business perspective, where do you think we are in the realm of college football?
Well, I mean, the arms race with the stadiums is, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but you know, I mean, if people are donating money and they're not using taxpayer money, what I have a problem with is when they raise the student fees and that goes towards part of it. And, you know, that's what I have a problem with. There may be a student, and believe me, I love college football, or I wouldn't have spent my career covering it. But if there's a student who doesn't have anything to do with college football, they shouldn't be paying a student activities fee that goes anywhere near an athletic department or to defray any costs associated with athletics. That's just wrong, in my opinion. But I do think it certainly helps some schools. I mean, haven't I read where Alabama now is almost like half the kids that go there are from out of state? Isn't that correct?
It's vastly increased in the last 10 years.
Yeah, they're recruiting out of state kids, and I guess there's more money with kids paying out-of-state tuition.
Of course.
If that's what you want, I mean, if that's what you want the University of Alabama to be, to, you know, I mean, there's a lot to be said for having people from different areas of the country, and certainly you want to have a lot of cultural diversity, but how much of it, you know, like I know North Carolina used to be a lot tougher to get in for out-of-state kids. So I guess it's just a matter of every school, in my opinion, has to have their business plan of what they want to be. Alabama has changed vastly in the since the 20 years ago when I covered it. When I covered Alabama, I mean, it felt like Alabama when you were there. There was a flavor to it, and now you go there and, you know, I don't know if I would say that's necessarily the case, that it represents the flavor of the state of Alabama anymore. And some people would say, oh, that's great. This is college. We want people from all over the country there. And other people would say, hey, this is our state university. Why don't we want our in-state kids getting first grab at it? So just like with academics, I think football programs have to decide, you know, what their business plan is going to be. I know, like, the University of Michigan won't allow all this advertising inside because they want to preserve that tradition at Michigan. Well, Kentucky doesn't have much of a tradition to preserve. I mean, since Paul Bear Bryant left there a long time ago, Kentucky football really hasn't had much to talk about. So if it's Louisville and Papa John's Stadium or whatever Kentucky's going to put on their stadium, you know, that's their call and that's their business decision, I suppose.
We're visiting with Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com. As I speak to you, speaking of Alabama and the business of college football, I see that Nick Saban will be paid $11.125 million this season under a three-year contract extension that includes a $4 million signing bonus. I guess the bubble of college football hasn't burst quite yet, Mike.
Well, you know, it's funny. They used to give those bonuses at the end of the 3 or 4 years. They were called retention bonuses. And it's like, okay, coach, if you'll see us out these next 3 years, we'll give you that $4 million at the end. But obviously, Saban's agent, I believe it's Jimmy Sexton still probably, who's probably the best college football sports agent out there in terms of getting money for his clients and striking deals, they give him that bonus up front. So if Nick Saban decides he wants to leave after next season or the season after that, he can. So it was negotiated in a way to pay him that three-year bonus before he's actually done those 3 years. And, you know, hey, kudos to Nick Saban. If you can make that kind of money winning a national title, you know, once in 4 years, I think that's pretty impressive. I think Cal Perry makes a lot of money at Kentucky. You know, there's no question that Nick Saban has had a lot of success at Alabama, a lot of football success. And Alabama has become the most dominant team in the SEC. There's been some collateral issues off the field, you know, some player issues, coach issues. But I again, business model, and that's what the people that run the University of Alabama want. They desperately need Nick Saban to be successful, they feel.
Mike, you just said something that's sort of interesting, because I think I've seen a lot of people tweeting in response to this extension, a three-year extension for Nick Saban, basically saying that, oh, people who've been negatively recruiting towards Saban saying that he's going to retire in the next 2 years, this proves that he'll be around. But you sort of flipped that argument when you said most of the time these bonuses come on the back end. By getting more money up front, should that lead us to believe that maybe Nick Saban coaching out this contract probably won't be the case?
I think his age and the expectations would lead you to believe that. I mean, if you think about Steve Spurrier, who's, you know, I think, you know, one of the greatest coaches, you know, of our lifetime, and what he did at Florida and the way he did it, I just thought he was such a unique individual. And you know, what finally drove him out at Florida? Well, ironically, Tennessee beating him in 2001 was the last straw, because a lot of fans were disappointed, you know, that Florida wasn't going to play for a national title. And he basically said, you know, if it's come to the point where winning 10 ball games isn't enough for you know, Nick Saban doesn't want to hear that. He doesn't want to hear fans are disappointed with the loss in the national title game. I mean, you reach a certain age, and it happens for all coaches, and enough is enough. And, you know, what is the really – I mean, let's be real here. What does the money really mean to Nick Saban anymore? It's not like he's had a whole lot of time to enjoy it. You know, he works all the time. I mean, it's good for his family, but at some point, you know, how many millions do you got to have before it really matters? I mean, I guess we're all motivated by different things, and certainly those coaches, I think, are deserving of a lot of money because of the nature of their business, the amount of pressure. You know, the quality of life for them is all football, and Coach Saban loves football, but still, you know, at some point, you know, he's got to think about enjoying, you know, what's left of his life. I mean, we all have to balance that work and quality of life issue every day. Nick Saban is still a human being, and so I think it's unrealistic to think, you know, that he can sustain at the level that he's been working, you know, as he gets older, as it would be the case of anybody that reaches that point in their life. You have to take a second look at it and evaluate.
Mike, I did want to get your thoughts quickly just on the draft as far as Tennessee was concerned. Derek Barnett selected higher than some people thought. I still am okay with where he went because I think he's going to be a great pro for a long time. Josh Dobbs goes 125th, I believe it was, to the Pittsburgh Steelers, which I think is a great fit for him to be able to sit behind Roethlisberger for a few years, have a chance to learn there. And Todd Haley loves the deep ball, and Dobbs throws it well. Just overall, your thoughts on where Tennessee players ended up in the NFL draft?
I think Derek went about where he should go. I don't know if he'll be a great pro, but I think he'll be a solid pro because of his work ethic and his attitude, his intensity. You wonder how dynamic he can be. But still, if you want a solid pro guy that's going to be there, I think he's a guy you can count on. And then you just take a look. You mentioned Josh Dobbs, and you're right. It does seem to be a good situation in terms of having a veteran quarterback to play behind. And yet, and still, there's a great supporting cast or a great cockpit. You know, that's kind of what happened to Dak Prescott. He landed in the perfect place, and then Romo gets hurt. And then you look around, and the Cowboys have one of the best offensive lines in football. They have a running back, a dynamic running back, and they have, you know, some of the best targets out there at wideout. And you could say very much the same thing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I think it's a good situation for Josh. I guess it remains to be seen. You know, how well he'll be able to take advantage of that now that he's focused on football. I know that he's pretty much a polarizing figure. And one of the Alabama beat writers told me he's just not that good of a quarterback. And I thought, well, you know, he led the league in passing efficiency. That says something, I would think. But here nor there, I think it's a good spot for Josh. Other guys, Kamara going third round, he ran a slow time at the 40. I think he's got a good situation with the Saints as kind of a third down back behind Adrian Peterson and Mark Ingram. And I think Josh Malone's an absolute steal in the fourth round, a 6'3", 210 guy, ran a 4.40 at the NFL Combine, steal for the Cincinnati Bengals. Jalen Reeves-Maybin gone higher than I thought. Linebacker, shoulder issues, missed most all of last season, a little bit undersized. He's a whirling dervish when he's healthy. Lions took a chance on him in the fourth round. I think his agent and him have to be very happy with that. And then Cam Sutton, kind of a versatile DB, also going to the Steelers. He can play the nickel. He can play safety. He's a return guy. I think that's a value pick for the Steelers.
Great stuff, Mike. Really do appreciate the time. It's always good catching up with you, and look forward to doing it again next week.
All right. Appreciate it, Cole. Thank you.
Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com joining the show. Let's get to 10 After Tweets, brought to you by First Film and Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweet!
Cecil Hurt tweets, in addition to Saban's $4 million bonus and three $1 million assistants, I found a quarter in my car seat this morning.
Yeah, there's a lot of money going around. So Nick Saban's salary is going to be $7.1 million this year. Not much of a pay increase. But he gets $4 million just for signing his three-year contract extension. Just for signing that bad boy up. Was that right here? Is this what? And this is where I sign, right? Pretty sure. Okay, because you got the check ready? Good. Sign that thing right
Steve
there.
Berkowitz tweets, Nick Saban will be paid $11.125 million this season under three-year contract extension that includes a $4 million signing bonus.
He'll also get an extra $3.6 million if he finishes the 2021 season, which will be the end of this current contract. So that's basically if he finishes next four.
That's another bonus, you're saying?
Yes. He'll get an extra $3.6 million just for not dying after the 2021 season. So if he goes 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, still five seasons, if he finishes that, he gets an extra $3.6 million.
Alex Scarborough tweeted, by my math, Saban will be 73 when his contract expires. And before you ask, yes, I can see him lasting that long. The man doesn't slow down.
You know what's happening? You know what's funny? Right now, while all this stuff is being announced by the Board of Trustees and being finalized and being, well, it is finalized, Nick Saban's playing charity golf.
Today?
Yep. He, Gus Malzahn, Kirby Smart, they're all playing charity golf right now. The Chick-fil-A Challenge. Yeah, they're all playing golf. And Nick Saban's just extra moneying. What I found most interesting is, I guess you'll get to his contract in a moment. Tosh LaPoise?
Yeah, that's it's pretty steep. I was going to go with this first.
Sure.
Dan Murphy, at Dan Murphy ESPN tweets, $11 million in change this year for Saban. That bumps him back ahead of Harbaugh, parentheses, and everyone else, by a good margin. Paul Meyerberg, this is the most maybe intriguing part about this contract, tweets, based on a quick glance through pro and college salaries, Saban will be the highest paid coach in sports in 2017 at $11.125 million.
Yeah.
Here's my question. Does that include Charlie Weiss?
I think he should be done by now. I think he's close to done.
I need to know if Charlie Weiss is making more than that this year. Because I still feel like he's getting paid by seven different schools.
Again, we never really find that out until well after the fact for tax reasons.
Bueller tweets in, how much will Saban earn for speeches after he retires? A lot. He'll probably earn more to come in and consult with schools.
How much do you think he would need from us to come do this show? Daily.
I don't think there's a price tag that could sit him down here for 4 hours every day and just talk on the microphone.
Would he buy us a microphone?
Yes, and probably a new TV and some sort of way to watch film while we're in here.
Good.
Which would make for great radio, I think. I could turn that into pretty good radio.
Tosh LaPoise is the linebacker's coach. This year he made $550,000. Next year he will make $950,000.
That's a $400,000 raise?
That's a buttload of raises.
That's a nice little bump. That, and now you see why he turned down defensive coordinator jobs.
Linebackers coach, and apparently
now he's
a pretty good recruiter.
He's a top recruiter, yeah.
And apparently they really want to keep him.
So 11.125 this year for Saban. About that college football bubble bursting.
Well, the thing for Alabama is people are still showing up to the gates and people are still buying the merchandise and people are still... I mean, he makes a buttload of money just for Alabama.
People want that houndstooth Zippo, man.
They do, and he... Listen,
they're putting that yard flag in.
It doesn't go straight to his coffers, but I broke down the numbers, what, about 18 months or so ago about how much enrollment has changed since 2007. You just do some basic math. He's bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars.
Oh yeah, Garrett Baker.
To the university.
Garrett Baker tweets at Cole Kublik. Worth noting, this is a one-time bonus to sign an extension, and his current salary still underpaid compared to the impact he's made. I'm not going to say underpaid, but would I say fair compensation or worth it? Yes, absolutely. I'm not going to say underpaid by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, that's my favorite part about this is that people will still come in. Mostly Bama fans will say, "Yep." Still underpaid, worth a lot more. Still a lot of money to keep saying what people are worth. Token Fatboy tweets, and yet the same Coke bottle on the podium gets an extension in dust.
Ah.
Emoticon crying laughing face.
Bueller tweets, someone writes Saban a letter requesting a flat screen to donation for Ump Studios.
Brent tweets in about my Tosh LaPoise tweet about the ex-salary. That's an Obama speech. That almost gets you blocked. I don't know. I didn't bring up anything about politics at all. Don't care what anybody gets paid for a speech.
Chili Palmer at Blake Thomas 2755 tweets at Cole Kublik. Worth it. I don't recall anyone on the show saying he wasn't.
He's worth it, Cole. He's worth a lot of money.
So, it's intriguing that with this news, John Talty joins us next to talk about
the imminent death of college football.
And the business aspect of college football. And the fear of revenue streams. Can they continue? We'll talk to John right after this. Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Yump. Appreciate you guys tuning in, listening online, umsports.com. John Talty joins us from AL.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at Jay Talty. Good morning, John. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Appreciate you having me on again.
You wrote an article yesterday, how ESPN struggles could derail college football's exploding revenue, and then we find out Nick Saban's making over $11 million this year.
Yeah, interesting timing of that. But, yeah, I mean, I think if you read the article, I mean, you'll see that, like, for the big Power 5 conferences, especially like SEC, a lot of the, if there are potential issues, and I do believe that there could be, I mean, there are many years down the line. And so, you know, Alabama, probably along with Texas, is, you know, the healthiest athletic department in the country, and they're, you know, raking in money hand over foot. So, I mean, it makes total sense to invest the way they have and save it. And, you know, I knew the numbers were going to be big. I was talking to somebody about it yesterday. And, if you just look at all that Saban's done for that school in terms of just athletic departments and just school growth, I mean, even the fact that he's going to make $11 million this year, I mean, he's worth even more than that to the school. So I'm not going to get too offended by that number because it makes total sense to me.
Visiting with John Talty of AL.com. Overall, though, when you maybe, if anything, in business, you remove the top and bottom 10% if you want to see how healthy it truly is. If you did that with college football, from a revenue stream, from a fiscal health moving forward, how healthy is the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a major question. I mean, I think certainly, you know, there's a lot of in the middle, I would say, that aren't quite as healthy as I think people make it out to be. And some of them are, you know, they're boosted by subsidies. You know, they're getting a lot of money from student fees. You know, schools like Rutgers, for instance, which has been a Power 5 school, getting a lot of money from basically its students, so it's not quite as, you know, financially healthy as some people make it out to be. I mean, I think in general there's been a lot of money pumped into the game, primarily through TV. You know, TV contracts have gone through the roof, and that's brought in a lot of money for all these different schools. But with that, you know, there's been more and more spending, and at a certain point, you know, that could create some issues. But I mean, I think, like I said, if you look at the absolute top 10%, the Alabamas, Texas, I mean, they have more money than they know what to do with, legitimately. But more in the middle ground, it's not, I mean, they're not maybe making as much money as some people make them out to be. And when you look at some of the different things like unlimited snacks and cost of attendance and things like that, those all add up. And they're especially making it difficult for the, you know, Conference USAs, the, you know, AAC, those places which are making some money but not a ton, it's really making the margins smaller.
Visiting with John Talty of AL.com. How do you think that rights deals will be affected by this moving forward? Arky and I were discussing earlier in the show that if ESPN has paid a certain amount, and let's say Fox is to their limit with what they're going to pay for college football, who's the next suitor in line if it's not a big television network? And is that a realistic option for big boy college football?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And I think, you know, one of the most obvious ones, and I mentioned this in my story, is Amazon. Just because they've shown an interest in, you know, live sports, they've taken off a piece of a Thursday night package for the NFL. So there could be some potential interest in that. You know, we've seen some of these smaller places like BN Sports, Campus Insiders, 124. I don't think that they have the capital to take down a big property. But a place like Amazon, you know, or YouTube, given all the money that they have through Google and things like that, could decide that they're willing to, you know, pay a lot of money, not only because there's value in it, but also because it just looks good. You know, YouTube could be more willing to take something that's not going to return a ton of money in terms of revenue just because of it would be a good look for YouTube, whereas if ESPN, with, you know, some of their financial struggles, has to tighten the belt a little bit, they might not be as willing to take, you know, a big property that doesn't make as much sense. They're not going to make as much money off of. So you could look to places like Amazon has so much money, and they're doing so many different things. In the theory, you know, if they want to boost their subscriber numbers, they could try to take a, you know, big piece of college sports.
John Tall, TFAL.com, joining us. How different do you think that college football entities will have to be in finding new revenue streams in the near future, the next 5 to 10 years?
I mean, I think it's crucial. I mean, I think we saw it yesterday with Kentucky striking up a deal with Kroger to bring in, I think, about, I think it's like $1.95 million a year. I mean, it makes sense for them to do that, especially because in terms of revenue in the SEC, they're towards the bottom. I think you always have to look for different alternative methods of doing things. You know, if you're the absolute cream of the crop, the Alabamas of the world, you don't have to do as much of that stuff. But, I mean, just locally for us, I mean, UAB has to do all kinds of different things if they're going to try to stand out. You have to look at different, you know, whether it's sponsorship. I've even talked to some of these smaller IDs where, you know, they're moving away from Nike because they can get more money from Under Armour or Adidas, even if Nike's a better, you know, brand and it's what their kids want more of. You know, they need to kind of find different ways to take money down. So you're going to see all kinds of different alternative stuff. It'll be interesting whether you ever see, like, sponsorships on jerseys. That's always been a big thing, you know, for European soccer and other things. You start to see some people dabble in it in the United States. I mean, it would be fascinating if you saw, you know, watching a Kentucky football game and you got a big Kroger sponsor on either the front or the back of their jersey. I mean, that could at some point happen. So it'll be interesting to see how it develops, but I do think that with rising costs, you got to find revenue in alternative ways, and some schools are more aggressive than others. But you know, if things dry up, whether it's TV money or otherwise, you got to replicate that somewhere else. And I think that's what you're going to see a lot more schools doing in the future.
Visiting with John Talty of AL.com. I was listening to Richard Dicer's podcast yesterday, and he was visiting with Jim Miller, who wrote the ESPN book. Jim said he actually does not believe that the ACC network will actually launch in 2018 when it's scheduled to. What do you expect from networks like that and the partnership between ESPN, the SEC network, how the Big Ten is structured? These conference networks, we know the Longhorn Network is a financial bleed and drain and just bloodshed all over the place. It's not working. But other Power 5 networks moving forward, do you expect more? Do you expect them to continue to be successful? What do you see in the future for those?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, I mean, I think especially with the Longhorn Network, you mentioned that. I mean, it'd be shocking to me to see ESPN renew that deal because I've gotten pretty much no value from it. I've also heard the same thing about the ACC Network. Pretty much everyone I've talked to in the industry thinks that they waited too long to launch. And at this point, the market doesn't really support it as much, and that's why I think, you know, you might see, I mentioned in my story that you could see it maybe replacing like ESPN Classic or ESPN News somewhere on their kind of channel lineup, but I don't see it becoming a major priority for them. So that's certainly an issue for the ACC network right now. It's just a digital thing, and that, you know, if it doesn't become a linear network channel, that's going to limit, you know, potential revenue for the ACC big time. The SEC network is really interesting because right now it's the strongest, at least, you know, in terms of estimates and things like that, of the conference network. Before the SEC, the interesting thing is that it's the most tied out of any of the conference networks to ESPN, you know, where the Big Ten, you know, is half-owned by the Big Ten and then Fox. The SEC network is wholly owned by ESPN. So that was a great thing when they launched because ESPN was able to use the muscle and basically force all these different cable providers to make sure the SEC network was on there. Got a pretty strong subscriber number from the get-go. I think it's about average of 74 cents a month for SEC Network, which is a good chunk more than Big Ten or ACC. But, you know, if ESPN struggles continue, if you go down that line, the model continues to change and ESPN, you know, less and less people are subscribing to cable, it could create some problems for the SEC because it's just not going to – it doesn't own it. You know, if ESPN struggles, then in part the SEC Network could struggle, and in theory that could hurt the SEC. But the biggest thing that I think the SEC Network has going for it is that the demand for the SEC football and the SEC Network in general is so much stronger than any of the other networks. You know, there's people are going to be willing to pay $10 a month or $15 a month if they have to for just the SEC Network, especially if they keep putting football games on there. So I don't think the SEC is necessarily a bad place, but as I said, they're the most tied to ESPN, both through their, you know, regular deal and through the SEC Network. So if, you know, if the model fully blows up, then that could create some interesting challenges for the SEC network.
How do the financials offset as far as responsibilities in terms of what's paid for that's different between the SEC and ESPN Network, SEC Network and ESPN's relationship? Is the conference responsible for more of the cost that could offset that and make it a better deal for ESPN?
Yes, I mean, all different schools had to kind of incur some initial startup costs, which I think some of them are still kind of paying off. So, I mean, it was a pretty good deal, I think, overall for ESPN. And I think what's interesting is that as we do talk as much about ESPN struggles, that we don't really talk about the SEC Network, which has been a big success for ESPN. It has a good amount of subscribers. It's making a good amount of money. Advertising is pretty strong overall. So it's been a very good deal overall because they're putting more and more of the onus on, you know, campus produced stuff. They're, you know, allowing, they're kind of keeping some of their costs down in that regard by putting it on the schools rather than just kind of doing everything for Bristol the way they might for, you know, the main channel. So it's been overall pretty good because they've kind of shared some of the costs, and they're getting, you know, from my understanding, they're getting more than 50% of the revenue. So, I mean, it's been a pretty good deal for ESPN overall.
Great stuff, John. Appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up again soon.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
John Talty with AL.com. Nice article up on AL.com about ESPN struggles and how they could derail college football's exploding revenue streams. When you hear that, Arky Shea, does it? We talked about the concerns of college football moving forward from a health perspective, from a business perspective. Is there a reason to be? I mean, this argument seems asked backwards now that we got Nick Saban making $11 million this year.
Well, and John started the conversation off by we're looking down the road trying to protect the health of the sport going forward because we love this thing so much, but. Am I worried about it immediate short term? No. Nick Saban is going to be long gone before any of this becomes a real issue for the sanctity, for the health, for the safety of football going forward for your grandkids and your great grandkids. It's just where will people become rational? Where will board of trustees become rational? This money that Nick Saban is making, it's not irrational. You know, went back and ran the numbers. Before Nick Saban was the head coach at Alabama till now, enrollment's up 14,000 people. It's 14,000 students that are paying out-of-state and in-state tuition, getting money from the government, getting money from their parents, a lot of book money, a lot of everything money.
Book money.
Well, some of that goes to the university. It's a lot of irons in the fire.
Sure.
So that's, as long as Nick Saban is doing things like that, he's worth this money. It's a sound business investment.
I know this is probably.
Will the next guy make $11 million?
No.
Will Dabo Swinney, if he comes in, make $11 million?
No.
Gonna have to win a couple more titles too.
I remember this, and this is probably a little bit ahead of your time. I'm dating myself here, but it was a huge deal back in the day when Bobby Bowden got $1 million a year. And he and Lou Holtz were the only two coaches in college football that had lifetime contracts.
Mm.
I don't know if you remember that or not, but they both did. Had
what?
Lifetime contracts at Notre Dame and at Florida State. If there was ever a guy that seems like he's deserving of a lifetime contract of basically just, hey, man, here's what we can pay you. Why don't you just coach until you croak? It seems like it should be Nick Saban.
It does.
I don't know. Did Paterno have a lifetime deal? I can't remember if he got one of those or not. I know Holtz and Bowden both had one.
I wish you could have started Nick Saban with that. Said, "Hey, just stay here." But now then you lose all the power that got you to the $7 million, all the Texas flirting, all the things that make agents like Jimmy Sexton more money.
We thought four was a big deal.
Yeah,
we thought four was absurd.
Yeah, and it still is.
You know, it's not absurd. Valley Equipment Rental. Head over to valleyequipmentrents.com or call Ross and Tanner and the guys at 256-964-6081. 256-964-6081. Valley Equipment Rental can help you out with tillers, pressure washers, stump grinders, scissor lifts, anything that you need to be doing some work around the yard or with your construction project. Valley Equipment Rental is here to help. The best service in North Alabama. There's over $1 million in new equipment that was purchased this year that you're going to be able to head down to 3551 South Memorial Parkway and choose from. And like I said, that service, it beats everybody else in town. Those guys are going to get you into the exact piece of equipment that you need for your project at the best price available. Valley Equipment Rental, valleyequipmentrents.com. The website's completely redone. Log on, go click on a product you're interested in, you fill out a little bit of information, and Service Tech gets back with you from Valley Equipment Rental to help you out with your needs and what piece of machinery you might need to help finish out your project. That's Valley Equipment Rental at valleyequipmentrents.com. We'll take a break. When we come back, TV listings and another one next.
I know you're about to do TV listings, Cole, and it's one of our favorite segments on the show. But, eating a donut right now. I know you're going to get to Dancing with the Stars, too, because I think it's their, like, their second night of what they do, two nights. Isn't, I think David Ross is still on that show. You know, the
Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, the Dancing with the Shows. I think I saw him tweet something last night that there was a rain delay. Or something for the Cubs.
Is Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, no. For the Cubs game.
He had the thing inside.
And he said, hey, if there's a rain delay, I hear there's a rain delay, why don't you go check out Dancing with the Stars night? Or maybe he's just a shill for them. I don't know at this point.
I saw this tweet from Matt Brown, at Matt Brown CFB. 59 years ago, Houston, Texas, the Associated Press reporting, Bear Bryant today signed a 10-year contract as head football coach and athletic director at the University of Alabama. No salary terms were revealed. The Alabama Journal at Montgomery, however, said it learned the salary was fixed at $17,500 a year.
Would Nick Saban accept that? Would he accept the Bear terms?
No.
So you're telling me he thinks he's better than the Bear?
Knows he is.
Fair enough. Or should I say, bare enough?
Ooh, let's get to our TV listings. Tuesday night means
balls.
Excuse me?
Basketballs. Yeah, footballs.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think Golden State plays tonight. Number one seeds are in action tonight. I think Boston and Golden State both play. Not each other, though.
NCIS tonight, 7 p.m. Fresh Off the Boat, that's on CBS. ABC has Fresh Off the Boat tonight, 8 p.m. Followed by Imaginary Mary at 8:30. Prison Break on Fox at 8, new episode. The Mick at 7:31 p.m., new episode on Fox.
Mm-hmm. So not Dancing with the Stars tonight?
Not tonight, no. I'm sorry.
See, I thought they did like those normal shows do, which is like you have an episode, and then the next night you reveal like the voting or whatever.
Mm. You were wrong.
Thanks, Cole. Feels good to hear that.
Flix has The Illusionist tonight at 7 p.m.
Bet it does. Or does it? It's an illusion.
Fuse TV tonight, back-to-back-to-back-to-back episodes starting at 7 p.m. of Moesha.
Mm.
And for you, Arkishay FX, tonight, 6:30 p.m., Captain America, the First Avenger.
Oh, hey. I like these Marvel movies.
Yeah, you said that you're into that.
Except Doctor Strange. That's a terrible movie.
HBO tonight, 7 p.m., 2017 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Any idea who's getting in?
Yes, there's a lady that's getting in.
Hmm.
Joan Baez or something, maybe?
Correct.
Am I right?
Yes.
Nice.
Can you get another one?
ZZ Top.
No. Electric Light Orchestra.
Oh, ELO, baby.
Woo. Journey.
Why aren't they in by now?
Pearl Jam. Diet Cole will probably be there.
Pearl Jam.
Tupac.
Bro.
And Nile Rodgers receives the award for musical excellence.
Can I just throw this one thing out there? Not that Tupac doesn't deserve to be in a Hall of Fame.
Why is it at the Barclays Center when the Hall of Fame is in Cleveland?
Make it more of an event. Can we just make a music Hall of Fame instead of a rock and roll Hall of Fame? Because Tupac wasn't rock and roll.
Yeah, I'd be cool with that.
All right.
All right, we'll get to a break. Come back with another one right after this.
Cole, it's the last segment of the show. It's time for...
This is it?
Yep, this is it.
Another one.
Cole, I want to tell you about Bailey Hemphill. You know who that is?
I don't.
You probably don't. It's a freshman, a softball player for the University of Alabama. She had a home run yesterday against the Tuscaloosa, against Ole Miss in Tuscaloosa. She rounded the bases, went to tag home, actually jumped over home plate, and then was tagged out.
Ooh,
because no. She jumped over home plate, Cole. You have to touch all the bases. So, Patrick Murphy, being the head coach of Alabama, says, oh, hey, Bailey, go back over there, and I know you're celebrating. Go touch that home plate real quick. And as she goes to touch over there, the Ole Miss catcher took the ball, tagged her before she could get there. She's out. Take a run off the board. Doesn't count.
Never good.
That's embarrassing, Cole.
Some big news.
Another one.
News release from the NHL.
Yes.
For immediate release.
Hockey talk.
Start time set for second round games on Saturday, May the 6th. That's this Saturday.
That is this Saturday.
National Hockey League today announced the following updates to the 2017 Stanley Cup playoff second round schedule. The start time of Game 5 of the second round series between the Rangers and Senators, if necessary, has been set for 2 p.m. Saturday, May 6th in Ottawa. The game would be televised exclusively on NBC Sports Network in the U.S. and in Canada. The game would be on CBC and TVA Sports.
Huh? It's okay.
Start time of Game 5, the second-round series between Penguins and Capitals, has been set for 7:15 Saturday, and we televise exclusively on NBC. That's following the Kentucky Derby. That rating will do a good number.
We'll not watch the Kentucky Derby. We'll probably wait, and I will watch a little bit of hockey.
Yeah, I'm out.
Not interested in horse racing.
Great show today. Really appreciate Spencer Hall, Mike Griffith, John Talty, and Bill Connolly all joining us. We're back tomorrow, 6 to 10, right here on Sports.